Hello, and welcome to the Thinking Elixir podcast, where we cover the news of the community and learn from each other. My name is Mark Erickson.
I'm Cade Ward.
And I'm David Bernheisel.
Let's jump into the news.
Hey, first up, Elixir 1.17 is on the verge of being released. I don't know what brought me there. I just decided to go visit the changelog on the main branch, and I saw that 1.17 was, you know, still there. And I noticed that there were some goodies in there I hadn't realized. The first one being that there's going to be support for a duration in there. As far as I understand, I think duration is actually technically in Elixir now. It's just not exposed. And duration meaning a struct for representing a duration. So you can say an hour, right? No real beginning and end time frame. It's just a duration. So that implies that there's a new publicly facing duration type, which is pretty nice. And it includes the ability for a date, time, daytime, naive daytime to have a duration on it, like shifting. For example, you want to shift back an hour, you can pass in the duration struct instead of a raw value. Now, does this replace Timex and all of its duration goodness and glory in there? No, not yet. There's a lot more that Timex does and other libraries most likely that also deal with durations and time. So don't burn down your Timex dependency quite yet, but I do think that that, you know, is useful enough. And obviously it's already part of Elixir, I think. They're just going to give it some new powers. There's other goodies in the change log too, and I'm sure that things will continue to change. Some folks might notice some mix superpowers, like the ability to add breakpoints. We had reported on this earlier, where you can now add mix test dash dash breakpoints. So when your tests fail, a debugger session will start right then and there. That was pretty cool. Another one about printing out your slowest test modules. That also seems cool. You can now, in your mix dependencies, when it's a Git sourced one and not like a hex sourced one, you can now specify the depth option. So you can essentially shallow clone, you know, dependencies now, which can be pretty helpful, probably pretty helpful for NX and machine learning, and probably for hero icons now that I think of it. Anyway, so lots of cool things in the changelog. You should go visit it every once in a while and see what's coming up.
Yeah, it's a good call out. When I saw that duration thing that you pointed out, I was like, wait, I know there's already duration stuff. And so I remembered, oh, that was in Timex. Right. Yes. Mm-hmm. It's not something that I call on very often. Previously in my career, I had worked on software that was doing calendaring and scheduling kind of stuff. It wasn't with Elixir. That was back in C Sharp. Ooh.
Good old days, huh?
Yeah. You know, having to handle calendaring things, you realize how important duration is and being able to shift something on a calendar to a different day or different time and be able to keep all the other information. So lots of times people just end up creating their own custom structures for those things. But I just think it's really great when it becomes part of the core library, you know, the standard lib.
Yep.
One of the things in there that I really like, mix test dash dash repeat until failure. I can't tell you how many times I have copy and pasted this little bash script that's just like run until it fails and it loops and then it has to actually restart mix test every time, which has a little bit of overhead, right? So that's good when you're debugging an intermittent failure, those pesky little tests that only fail sometimes.
Yeah.
That's a good tip. All right. And next up, a new Benchy integration for Livebook. So Benchy is an Elixir benchmarking tool, and there's a new Kino Benchy library that you can pull into your Livebooks. So this one was pointed out by Alex Kutmos, who was involved with the work on this project. It looks like there's a group of people who are all pushing for this. And he shared a graphic of what this looks like. And honestly, I thought it was pretty impressive looking. Normally, when you'd use Benchy, it's a command line interface type of thing. You could use it to generate an HTML report. But honestly, this Kino thing is like how it was probably always envisioned to be. It's very cool, very nice looking. So what it does, if I can just describe it, we've got a link to it in the show notes where you can go check it out. After running the benchmarks, it renders some visualizations in your Livebook. Along the top, there's a set of tabs. They say runtime statistics, memory statistics, and reduction statistics. And then on the runtime statistics tab, you have a table of all the different test runs with the table data of, you know, their timing and measures. And then below that, you have a nice bar chart graph that helps visualize the results. So very cool, I think. Livebook is a perfect place to do this kind of example work, and especially when you're exploring different libraries and options for how to process something.
Yeah, and speaking of benchmarks, the internet's sent us on a journey across some Twitter post comparing Gleam and Go, and we'll just throw a caution out there because you know how these things go. We don't actually know the details here. Could be a complete lie, could be something serious, but it was comparing Go and Gleam, and it was showing how Gleam had a bit lower latency and was a little bit faster than Go. So that's interesting. Take it with a grain of salt, but interesting nonetheless.
Yeah, the typical story I hear out there is the lower level languages such as Go are like always faster, and Go typically has those micro frameworks, right? So they're like generally doing less. So yeah, it was just a good comparison, I thought, of like what the Beam is capable to do and comparing that to a typical lower level language. I always know it. I know it in my heart that the Beam is just so good for this exact scenario. And to see my already determined beliefs reaffirmed by random internet charts just made my heart happy.
It's worth pointing out that Gleam is a statically typed language that's written on the Beam. So it actually compiles down into like the lower AST for Erlang and runs on the Beam. And it's also just worth pointing out that the person reporting this said that the task that was being measured was generating some HTML and some JSON. No async, no logging, nothing like that. Trying to really just get down to who handles better generating IO with this. And so it's really great to see something like that where, you know, especially when we can shout out and show Gleam as doing a really good job there.
Yeah, which recently hit 1.0. All right. Well, a bit of fun news. There is now a Phoenix emoji. So the emoji has versions. So I don't know if you do this, but emoji 15.1 was released out into the wild. And I guess some OSs have probably already updated to it. So you get your hardware emoji keyboard out, which I'm sure everyone has. You'll see there's a new key that physically popped up. It's the Phoenix bird, you know, with the whole fire thing, you know, going around it. It was also introduced alongside of the lime. So there's a slice of lime now that you can emoji out to the world. We already had the coconut, but as far as I know, you still cannot put the lime in the coconut. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, but this little Phoenix emoji, I imagine we'll start seeing this a little bit more, maybe in social media tweets and stuff like that. But it does have the red bird and little flames from below. So it's very cool.
The closest one I've seen, like people literally talking about Phoenix framework, they've been using the little baby bird one, the chick one. So now we can grow that chick up into a real Phoenix bird.
That's funny. Yeah. And next up, there is a new Elixir tip from Herman Valesco. He shows how using Elixir's newer functions tap and then in pipelines can let us insert something into a pipeline without breaking it, breaking the whole flow. So I remember when tap and then came out and I was like, wow, these are really cool. I had to read up on them to try and understand how would I use this? Why would I use this? But it never really became part of my repertoire, my normal grab bag of tools. And I just kind of forget about it sometimes. So it was really handy to see, hey, this is how you can stick something into a pipeline and then use just a simple example like debug, where you want to debug just a nested piece of data within a pipeline and not interrupt the pipeline. So little things like that. There was another recent Elixir tip where he shared the difference between double ampersand version of and the and keyword and the double pipe and the or keyword, just how those operate differently and why you might use one over the other.
Yeah, it's easy when we've been in Elixir for a long time to forget how nice piping is. Like every once in a while, I venture back into JavaScript and kind of like make intermediate variable names just so that I can have a variable to pass it into another function. That's hard work. And so it's nice, the tap and the then. I don't want to have to set a variable just so I can put it into something and then start doing something else. And that's hard work to name things. I don't want to name things.
Yep. Or you have like that deeply nested like function calls function calls function calls function. And then so it's all actually you have to read it correctly. You have to start at the inside, the most inner part, and then read it out.
Right. That's right. Which is hard.
Oh, it's terrible.
I have a whole blog post that compares like where the happy path is and the unhappy path is. Like this is about the with statement. This is kind of the same thing, though. Your eyes have to scan right to left. You know, which is just weird. Mm-hmm. I'm comparing it to Ruby, but JavaScript would have had the same thing. And then, yeah, you have the menial task of like naming your variables.
Con 1, con 2, con 3. Like, yeah,
updated con, new con.
Updated con, con with headers. new con. Anyways, moving on. So Rec is the new HTTP library on the block. It's the new kid on the block. And so we wanted to pass along this new blog post we noticed on the Dashbit website. It's called Rec API Client Testing, and it goes into a number of different ways that you might be able to test the Rec library. I know that is something you want to do if you're into testing. There's a lot of different ways to do it, and some are a little more verbose than others. So good tips here. Give it a read if you're into testing HTTP libraries.
Yeah, this is outlining all the Rec features, so you can pass in specific plugs. You can make outlines when a explicit contract might be helpful, that kind of stuff. So if you're confused about how to get those external API calls testable, that blog post ought to really help. All right, next up, we got Ash Framework, a big old V3 release candidate was put out there. I know Zach's very proud of this. So from the announcement, every Ash package that the Ash team maintains, at least, now has a published release candidate, and you can see the GitHub issue for the status of the known community packages. So it's nice to see that holistic view of the whole ecosystem for Ash getting this kind of treatment. So that's 18 core packages and 9 community packages. So yeah, quite an ecosystem. So with that announcement, Zach teased that he's currently working on a book as well for the Pragmatic Programmers. It's currently titled Building Web Applications with Ash. With so much being changed, you'll have to check out the announcement for the details, but he focuses improvements for security and simplicity and the developer experience. So that's the theme of V3 is security, simplicity, and DevX. They're updating guides, cookbooks, and documentation right now, but Ash V3 is on the horizon, so I'm very excited about that. If you're using Ash, you should go check out the release candidates, see what changes for you, and get prepared.
Yeah, and they did say that they're committing to at least 6 months of backward support for the version 2 branch.
Yeah.
So like any, you know, critical bug fixes or security issues that would come up, but not active development, right?
Yeah. There's an upgrade guide as well. So it's treated very much like a Phoenix upgrade, right? Like there's bigger upgrades with Phoenix. We'll have a guide to a migration guide or an upgrade guide. You'll have that with Ash as well. Very well thought out, very considerate. So love it.
And next up, Parker Selbert of Oben fame shared a great tip for anyone who maintains a hex package. He created a git alias command called changelog, and it auto-generates his changelog entries. It's really cool. I've already stolen this and used it this morning. It was awesome. It looks at all the commits since the last tag. It shows the full message with a date identifier, and it ignores anything that starts with a bump, which, you know, in entries that come from Dependabot. How much this will actually help you really comes down to how good your commit messages are. Like if you just say like work in progress, stuff, update, you know, it's not going to help you.
Whip, 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 whip.
Oh, I love version 1.3 upgrades. Changelog is a bunch of whips.
Yeah, but if you're, you know, doing a decent job of trying to do your commit messages, then this is like a great little tool there. Thanks, Parker. I already grabbed it.
Go check out the Twitter link with the actual alias in there. It got me wondering, where did the nomenclature for dependency upgrades to be called bumping? Why bump? Why not upgrade dependency? Or
it's like in pinball when you like bump the, you know, I'm making this up. The number goes up, right?
Does it? Okay. I don't
know. Your score goes up.
I mean, I've definitely adopted it. Like I do this, and now I'm just wondering, like, why do I do this? Why do we call it bump?
It makes sense if you don't think about it too much. Well, last up, following up on some Redis licensing changes, listener Conrad Taylor shared some good news with a Redis alternative. It's called Valky, which is kind of a cool spin on value and key and ha ha ha. Wow, really good. And the Linux Foundation is helping to get it organized. It sounds like many maintainers, community contributors, organizers, and importantly, corporate support is involved. It looks like there's industry participants, including AWS, Google Cloud, Oracle, Ericsson, Snap, Inc. are supporting Valky. And they're focusing on making contributions that support the long-term health and viability of the project so everyone can benefit from it. So at this time, it looks like Valky is the open source successor to Redis that has the most traction and credibility. I think last time we reported on Reddict, not as cool of a name.
Decidedly so.
The people have spoken.
And by the people, we mean these legal entities that are considered people in the U.S. legal system.
Big corporations.
Yes. It's AWS, Google Cloud.
Yeah.
This always happens whenever you have any big open source project that goes and becomes, you know, the licensing change. There's like a flurry of forks, right? Everyone's got a fork. And then it all really comes down to, where are the key maintainers, open source contributors? Where are they going? Because they're the ones who actually understand it. They're the ones who can fix it, add new features. They know what they were in the middle of and saying, yeah, we were working on a goal towards this. And they're the ones who can keep going forward with that. So right now, it looks like Valky might be it.
Got a bunch of conflicted feelings there, but maybe we can talk about it over some drinks at ElixirConf. You guys going to ElixirConf?
Probably not, but that would be fun.
I submitted a talk, and if they accept it, I will definitely be going.
Say I submitted a talk too. Maybe next episode we can talk about our talks. We could talk about talks.
You could say your talks.
Yeah. Didn't prepare for this, but yeah, just another reminder, since we're talking about conferences, we got NervesConf US coming up. We've got ElixirConf EU, which is probably happening at the moment that you're listening to this, dear listener. And then we also have Gig City Elixir and ElixirConf US. These are all US-based ones that we're immediately aware of. They're all coming up this summer. We got NervesConf and Gig City in May 9th through the 11th. They're at the same location. Then you got ElixirConf US in Orlando, Florida at SeaWorld in August 27th through the 30th, unless you're doing training. I think there's a couple extra days in the beginning there. So yeah, if you're not planning on going to one of those, change your plans. Go do them. go to your ElixirConf, you know, regional ones at least. Maybe the ElixirConf, the whole national one. I keep on calling it the premier one, but you know, I've actually noticed that the talks, like the big talks that we're all anticipating, they're all happening in Europe first, in the ElixirConf EU, and then they're repeated in the US. So maybe we're not the premier ones anymore. Maybe EU is where all the groundbreaking news is at.
Well, you do have a lot of people who are very much involved in the core of Elixir, and a lot of them are based in Europe. So that might be the easiest one for them to go to, and it happens to line up on the calendar first. So you're going to get lots of good stuff there.
Yeah, but SeaWorld, just kidding. EU is a beautiful place. I'm not jealous at all. Yes, I am.
I think they have some ocean there too. So.
So if you got the extra funds and some time, definitely make the effort to go out to ElixirConf EU. I'm sure that will be a lot of fun. And extra funds, I mean that, you know, for US-based folks, because that's a long trip. But look out for some conferences. They are always fun to go to. You will not regret it.
And that's it for the news. Fly.io. It's a great place to run Elixir apps. With many global regions, a private network that makes it easy to cluster your app, and a powerful CLI, it's something you should really try out. Experience it for yourself at fly.io. Well, you may have noticed that Cade's voice was back here. Yay, we missed you, Cade.
Yay.
So as a little bit of a housekeeping, we just want to talk about Cade. Cade, you're so awesome.
Let's talk about me. I just came back to mention that I haven't been here for a little while because we had a little baby, and babies don't like to sleep, and waking up early and recording podcasts is hard on low sleep. So I've just been taking some time off and decided I'm just going to take an even longer sabbatical because having a kid just changes things.
Yeah, this is kid number 4. So he understands what this is, what this means. It's not just the first one.
This is just the beginning. the re-beginning, because you've done this cycle a couple times.
This is just the fourth beginning.
But yeah, Cade, we've really enjoyed you being on. Totally understand when you got to step back and, you know, family comes first, especially as this is not your job. This is just something we do for fun because we love Elixir and the community.
Wait, Mark, you don't pay us?
So, yeah, I've been getting paid. No, I'm just kidding.
Wait, you guys haven't been getting a paycheck?
Just to make that clear, yeah, no one gets paid here. This is we make no money off of this.
Nope.
Yeah, Cade, like, you've brought an awesome perspective. You're one of the only developers on this podcast that has been a good source of, well, at the beginning it was outside perspective, but you've become part of the envelope.
Yes.
You've been sucked into the ecosystem and our beautiful Elixir processy ways.
Yep.
You know the good light now. Just kidding. You've always known it, but you've always brought a good perspective and reminding us that, like, what is actually, like, from previous experience, from your previous experience, what Elixir really does bring to the table for other developers that are in, you know, other ecosystems as well. You know, in your case, you came from a good JavaScript background. I can't say the same, you know. It's a typical story that folks can, Elixir folks can talk about their Ruby experience, but not a lot of them can say, you know, their JavaScript or their C Sharp experience or their other Java, regular Java, no script, all that kind of stuff, or systems programming, Rust and Go kind of stuff. So very thankful for the perspective you've brought over the years, right? We've been doing this for years.
Yes, it has. You were with us with episode one.
Yeah, when was episode one?
Episode one was June 17th, 2020.
2020. Oh my gosh.
Wow.
Wait, 2020? June? 2020?
Yep.
This is post-pandemic podcast? Did not realize that.
That's a long time.
Yeah. I thought we were pre-pandemic. I guess not. It's funny how that's like a marker of time now.
Well, it's been a good ride. I'm now converting to a listener.
you can heckle us from afar then.
You know, maybe we'll have to have you come back from time to time and report on things as you see them.
Yep.
Good luck with the kiddos. They need you. You need them.
Well, I'll sign us off for the last time. Thank you for listening. We hope you join us next time on Thinking Elixir.